Hello and good day to you from episode 26 of our podcast series, Project Breakaway, a metaphorical and literal time in the day when we here at Predator Cycling take some time away from working in the back shop to come and share with our listeners what we're doing, how we're doing it, what it takes to do it, our ideas, our innovative success stories, and even our missteps and failures. If you find yourself with an interest in bicycles, composite manufacturing, out-of-the-box design, or even curiosities beyond, I encourage you to stick with us, settle in, and learn a little. I'm Courtney B., co-owner and project manager of Predator Cycling. I'm here with my partner, RM Goganian, the other co-owner, CEO, lead designer and engineer, and returning online instructor. RM, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. I think I owe you an apology today.
Why?
Because I accidentally drank some of your latte. Took a sip.
I know. I got your cooties.
I know. Sorry.
I mean, one clearly says latte and one clearly just says black coffee.
But those are words.
But
I don't do words.
Clearly one does not read.
That's me. I don't read.
It's
sorry.
Okay. I forgive you.
Thank you.
For now. So before we jumped into our planned discussion for today, let's just briefly check in on the Tour de France. We were off last week, so we had no podcast.
Yeah.
And a lot happened on the tour, I think. and so today is stage 17.
Yeah. I believe I'm not watching it. I haven't watched it yet this morning, but it's a mountaintop finish today.
Okay.
So
they went over that big mountain thing that they usually go over?
Yeah.
The same mountains they go over every year?
They go over the same mountain ranges, and they approach them differently every year a little bit.
Yeah.
But Mont Ventoux was this year, and they did it twice. They go over the top, and then they go back over it again. So it's like insanity.
Mm.
Like it's been a crazy tour.
And so I mean, last week, earlier this week or last week, I don't remember anymore. Most stage wins in the tour is now tied.
Yes.
Held previously by Eddie Merckx.
Yes, who's probably, I mean, he is the most amazing cyclist.
And what years were those? The 90s? 80s?
80s. I believe the 80s is like the last time he raced the tour. 70s, 80s, something like that.
Okay, so
he's an old man now, but he's funny. He's still talking smack. Like, they interviewed him because Cav just tied his record.
Yes. Oh. So that doesn't make sense to anyone. So now he's tied with Mark Cavendish.
Yeah. Mark Cavendish is tied now with him and Eddie Merckx. Eddie Merckx and Cav are tied. Eddie Merckx made a comment about how he was going for the yellow jersey and not for the green jersey or stage wins. And so if he had gone for stage wins, he would have probably won over 100 stages. And Cav is only going for stage wins and the green jersey. So
because he's never won.
Right. No.
But how many times did Eddie Merckx win the tour?
I believe it's six. I believe he's won five or six times. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Mm.
I forget what the record is now. It's five or six.
So he still holds that record.
Eddie Merckx holds records that will never be broken. I mean, he has.
Why is that?
Because
he was that good, or because just back then it was like.
No, well,
the tech wasn't as great,
he was that good, but then at the time there wasn't. I mean, racers in that era were not as specialized as they are today. Today they're just so hyper specialized for events and different classifications and different styles of racers. You can't have someone that wins the GC also win the classics, also win the sprint stages. I mean, it just doesn't happen anymore. And he was just that much better than everybody at the time. He could win the sprint and the mountaintop finish.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, for me, that's probably the most exciting part of the tour is the green jersey race. And that Cav is back. I mean, he's kind of had a rocky couple years, kind of lost the love for cycling.
But he only has, four more stages to win a stage?
I think he has about two more sprint stages where he could possibly
otherwise,
break
he just has to come back next year.
He has to come back next year. And, I mean, Cav is amazing. He's an awesome athlete. He came back.
But someone will pick him up next year.
I'm sure Quickstep will continue him for sure. But I also, like, at his age, I mean, I hate to say it, but his age, like, I mean, I believe he's in his mid-30s.
There are people, when I was looking at their
41,
race cards, that were older than that.
41 is the oldest, but to keep that level of intensity at that age, it's just got to be so hard.
It's like, who is it? Brett Favre? No, not Brett Favre. Yeah. Who's the football players that never retire and they're in their 40s?
I don't know.
I don't
I mean, I'm sure that... Anyways, the point being is, I mean, I hope that he comes back next year and he kicks butt again. I just can't. It's so difficult to keep that fitness for that long.
I'm sure if not this year, I'm sure next year he could win it.
Yeah.
And then call it a day.
I mean, if I was him, I would be focusing on breaking that record, because that record will not be broken again for probably, 500 years. I mean, it's just like, it's insane. This is such an insane record.
So that is a highlight. And also a few big names have exited the tour.
Yeah.
To name a few, Vanderpool.
Yeah.
Nibali, who says he's going to focus on the Olympics. Yep. I guess a few are going to focus on the Olympics.
Well, and he
Why do the tour?
Well, because
if you know what's next, in three weeks, the Olympics.
So sometimes people use the tour as a builder to build up for the Olympics
with the intent to quit.
Basically, the intent to get some stage wins and plot. I would assume that Nibali came. I mean, Nibali's won the tour before. He's a very good racer. I assume he came with the intent to win, or at least get a high GC. He didn't have a high GC. He didn't win a stage. There's really not much more left for him. He'd rather save his legs and go for the Olympics. I mean, it's a strategic move. It's happened before. A lot of athletes have done it.
Okay.
They thought they were going to do this. Bad luck. Got a crash. Got stuck behind something. There's no way they can make it up. They rather pull out and be in better shape for the Olympics, possibly for a win.
Yeah. So also, Bösenhagen struggled after stage 16 and pulled. Simon Yates after stage 13 crash. Peter Sagan after stage 12 knee problems. Wow. Those are big names. What's the guy that won last year? Last year.
Yeah.
I meant 2 years ago. The Brit, the guy.
Oh, like, Chris Froome.
Is he still in Poland?
He won a couple. You're calling this all up back on me. Chris Froome won
because he was four like
years ago, refusing. 5 years ago. And
he won like 2 or 3 years in a row, right?
He won 3 years. He won 3 years. He won the tour. He had a horrible leg break a couple years ago. Got dropped from Sky, which is now Ineos, and then got picked up by the Israeli cycling team, and was actually training in LA, our old stomping grounds, is where he was training base camp for the tour preparation. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't pulled out, but it's amazing that he's back with, I mean, I think he broke his femur. I mean, it was no joke. He had a major break, and he recovered and came back. So for him to be back racing at that elite level, that's insane.
So what's your prediction for the next couple of days? Who's winning this?
Currently it's Pogacar who won it last year, and I mean, he's probably gonna win. He's got a 5 minute lead, 5 minute and change. And he hasn't shown any crack in his armor at all. I mean, he's just in amazing form. I don't think anyone can take back 5 minutes from him. Mm. UAE, which is the team he rides for, is not the strongest team in the world, but they've stepped up to protect the yellow jersey. So maybe there's a chance they can crack the team and somebody can take it. But second through like fifth is really close. It's like 30-second spread. So that's going to be dynamic. But
okay. That's a tour.
Yeah.
I didn't want to spend too much time on it. No. And then the Olympics are next. Actually, yep. Was there an Olympic road race?
There is an Olympic. There's a lot of Olympic events. There's Olympic road race. There's the time trial. And there's also all the track events. There's quite a bit. So it's exciting. It'll be exciting to watch. I'm curious to see how. I don't know. I haven't looked at all the teams and who's going and whatnot. But I'm curious to
see. It's kind of a, I don't know, just send it in, cash it in event, right?
The Olympics. Well, I mean, it's already been delayed. It's been delayed. Oh, no. I mean, it's usually a pretty big event.
Even in the tennis world, where my old, stomping ground, I guess.
Yeah.
The people are pulling out. They're it doesn't seem worth it. Well, COVID Olympics plus I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Olympics have definitely lost a little bit of their.
Plus, there's no spectator.
There's a lot of little things. It's probably not going to have the viewership in the past as it has last couple. I think, isn't it the last Olympics too were down on viewership?
I don't know. I watch it for gymnastics.
Oh, I watch it for track.
And ribbon dancing. And swimming and diving. Like the fun sports.
Like cycling.
Yes. Like cycling.
Mm-hmm. It's the best sport.
So let's talk about what we want to talk about, LinkedIn Learning Class. You had yet another LinkedIn Learning Class that went live and is now up for our little learners.
Yep.
That's what they call kids in the class, the daycare, little learners. So now you have a course entitled Fusion 360 Sketch Fundamentals that is now up. So a basic explanation of what that is.
Yeah, so Fusion 360 is the program that we use here a lot. That's our the basic backbone of what we use for our design work.
From Autodesk.
From Autodesk. It's a really awesome cloud. The back end of it is run on the cloud, so all your data is stored there, and it's a really cool software. I love it.
And you use that software for what?
I use the software for most, like about 90% of our modeling is done in Fusion 360. So I do all of our bike designs and all of our components, assemblies, the bearing systems, all that stuff is built inside of Fusion 360. And then once it's built there, I'll pull it out to do simulation work. But the basics of Fusion is you can really start a project in a couple ways, but the way I like to start with everything is with sketches. So
is
sketches.
Is that like 2D or 3D? So,
I mean, it's lines. There are lines and shapes and circles. So they are 2D in that sense, but you can draw lines in full 3D. So you're both X, Y, and Z coordinates. You can change. And so throughout this course, it's basically fundamentals. So we talk about all the tools and how to use the tools.
Like line tool.
Line tool, rectangle tool, circle tool, edit tools. How to run parameters, how to do 3D sketches, how to take those 3D sketches and turn them into 3D objects.
So it's like pencil on paper, but then making it 3D.
Yeah, and it's just really talking about the fundamentals on how to use tools. And the way I set it up was I kind of made it like a cheat sheet. It's like for myself, like I know how to use, you know, a lot of times in software, like I know how to use like 80% of the tools. But I'm like, oh, how do I use this one tool? So I basically, if you go through my course, there's the titles of all of the videos are all the tool sets that I use.
That you use? Not all that's available, just on
the... Essentially, everything that's available within sketching, I basically cover. Mm-hmm. So if you have a question about how to use the rectangle tool or the circle tool or how to do parameters, I basically have a 2 to 3 minute video. Some of them are 5 minute videos on it. And then at the end, I basically do walkthroughs of how you can use all those steps to create more complex geometries. So like I do an example of a bike frame, which I have another Fusion course that's designing a bike frame using different component systems. The basic of that is driven by a sketch. So I talk about that. I also do like a not so real, but like looks pretty good turbine, like a for a car.
Turbine?
Yeah, like a
turbine.
A turbine. The fan.
Not the headwear or no,
the fan for a turbo. A turbine. The fan for a turbine. I designed that with sketches from a single sketch and then use it to pull using the tools in Fusion.
How long is the course altogether?
I think it's 2 hours.
2 hours.
I think so.
So sketching is kind of like for smart people, like, I have an idea. Is this my first step?
It can be. I typically go to sketching is how I do things. I use sketching as all of my kind of my anchor points for everything is sketch. And then I use a lot of T-splines to kind of connect everything is usually how I do it. Or surface tools.
But that's probably a different class.
It is. But this is just to talk about sketching and how you can derive it. So like a lot of people that come from things like 3D Studio Max or like modeler programs like that, that are building, like working in like NURB surfaces and 3D surfaces, have a hard time transitioning to 2D and like how to drive parts. So this course is really good for that. It's also good for anyone that's coming into it from another modeling platform, like from SolidWorks or CATIA, and they want to start playing with Fusion. Some of the tool sets are just a little different. So
what do? You sketch something, and then what do you do with it? You send it into a different software, or do you send it to your CNC, or do you send it to your 3D printer?
Well, usually the way I use it, like for a bike geometry, I design the bike geometry in Sketch. So all my angles and offsets and bearing locations are all done in 3D Sketch. And then I actually link all of our assembly components to that sketch. So everything is driven from the sketch. So if I update the sketch, it updates the location of everything. And then I basically connect all of those points with T-splines. So for me, it's kind of the core of a lot of the designs that I do is driven by sketch. I use it to define where my precision geometry locations are throughout a part. Mm-hmm. You could also design it for like, you know, making bolt patterns or, you know, setting something up so that you could send to a laser cutter or drilling hole locations on a CNC machine. I mean, you could use it for a million and one things. Typically it's used to drive 3D geometry within Fusion 360.
Okay.
And that's then, typically, so I think, how you'd use it.
What is the takeaway for some, for our little learners?
Basically, it's to go over all of the tools within the sketching environment and what you can do with it, and also to kind of think about how you can use sketches to drive 3D geometry and to drive really complex geometry.
Is this for someone who's never opened Fusion 360?
Absolutely. If you've never opened Fusion 360 and you want to learn, sketching is a great place to start. And this could be a first step. I mean, I literally walk you through every of the basic tools within sketching and then build some parts with it. I don't do step-by-steps like click on this, click on that, click on this to build something.
It's not Sketch for Dummies.
No,
it's not my reading materials.
No, you could do it. You'd do it just fine. Mm-hmm. So I do basically, I show you all the tools and then I do like high-level overviews of how to use those tools in conjunction with each other to build complex geometries.
How is the availability of this software? Because it's pretty accessible, no?
Yeah, Fusion 360 is super affordable. I believe they changed their pricing models a little while ago, but if you buy a full seat of Fusion, it's like, I want to say it's like $400 a year.
But it's pretty economical compared to other software.
Yeah, so like if you're looking at Inventor or you're looking at Inventor, which is Autodesk software as well, that's their another tool set that's kind of more comparable to SolidWorks-ish. It's about $2,000 a year subscription fee. SolidWorks seats, I think they start around $6,000 or $7,000. CATIA, I don't want to know. I want it, but I don't know. I don't want to.
But also colleges and universities, are there student discounts? And
yeah, so I think if you're a student, it's free for 3 years. I don't know. You got to look this up, but I think it's like 3 years or something. You get a free license. It's also like it's a lot cheaper than a lot of different software. It's a very economical package. Mm-hmm. And then it has cool because like some of the higher end stuff you can buy in software. So you can buy like, you know, access to nesting and fabrication for like, you know, $100 or $200 for the month or something and get access to it. And then, you know, it goes away and you can kind of like rent and borrow different higher level services from within Fusion. So it's kind of cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anything else about this specific course?
No, I think it's a good course.
And I think if you, if you go to the website, I'll do that. Your free link. Link for 24 hours or 48 hours or something.
24 hours. If I share the link, if you go on LinkedIn, Predator will share it and the website will have it too. But as long as it comes from my link that I share, you get 24 hours one time. And then I think you can buy the class for life for like $49, I think, or if you have a LinkedIn Premier membership, which varies in prices depending on exactly what you get. But if you have that, then you get everything in learning.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of universities and school and employers also
offer
LinkedIn Learning subscriptions.
And if you do a LinkedIn Learning Pro, then you'll have access to the other 5 courses that you did this year.
Yeah, I got five now, all done. So I got the Fusion modeling bike frame, which is different modeling approaches to design different tubes of the bike, then connect them all together. And then I got the composites, the 3-part composite series on how we made our little boy's push bike.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is like a kind of a composite 101 course about what composites are, how they work, how to design for them, and then designing for it and parameters with early simulation, and then a deeper dive into simulation and manufacturing and actually showing the manufacturing process and testing of the bike. And then this is my final 5th course.
For the year?
I don't have any other courses on the books right now, but
what's next?
I don't know.
What would you like to do?
I've been thinking about a couple different ones. I've been thinking about maybe doing like an assembly type course about making things like parts that already exist without like too much custom stuff, like off the shelf stuff that you can buy and assemble in CAD and then like order it and make it kind of thing. I don't know. I'm I mean, simulation stuff is kind of my draw. Omniverse is super cool, but I don't know how many people are actually interested in some of that stuff.
Exactly. But also, like, we're just, like, messing around with that right now. So before you start teaching classes on it, we should really...
Yeah, for sure. It's not something I want to do now, but I think the implementation of how we are implementing some of the stuff in, like, Omniverse and stuff could be kind of cool.
Yeah. Okay. So that's your LinkedIn Learning professor, Professor Koganian. Tenured LinkedIn Learning professor.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Things to mention. You have been designing our cleat adapters that we've talked about before.
Yep.
The SPDSLs are available on our website and on Amazon.
Yep.
You just finished the production version design for the Delta and Kyo cleats.
Yep.
And we're actively doing the 3D print test runs right here.
Yeah, so we got the first production batches of...
And Delta's the Peloton one?
Yeah, it's the one that uses Peloton. So the Peloton bikes use a Delta cleat design, which is the original look cleat. And so, yeah, we have one that's specifically designed for that so that there's no excess. Because, like, what used to frustrate me about some other products is always that you'd get a Delta cleat or you'd get a Kyo cleat and you have all this extra material behind it, and it was never, like, I don't know, it just didn't fit right, and you'd always have to cut it and trim it. It was annoying. So these are all specifically built for each cleat system on the market so that we can have each cleat actually has its own kind of quirks on how it connects and, like, you know, how it works. And so each adapter is designed specifically for that cleat system.
Mm-hmm.
So
and there's quite a few Peloton owners from COVID era. So
yeah.
I don't know if a lot of just Joe Schmo people know that they even can have wedges on their cleats.
Probably not, but it's actually interesting.
Do you have to have clip-ons on the Peloton, or can you have, like, the little strap-over pedal, at the gym? I think you can.
They have this little on the backside, there's a little tiny platform, which is, I don't know how people actually use it, but people actually use that.
Just like a bike at a gym. Smaller
platform. But yes, they also make adapters where you can actually clip in a Delta cleat and then have, like, a platform pedal.
Mm.
There's just some adapters, and you can obviously just change the pedals.
Yeah.
But it's actually, interestingly enough, one of our first test cleats that we sent went to a Peloton rider.
Mm. Well, and we've decided to also add a Torx key and include it in the kit after my past rant about the reviews of not supplying a Torx key and the feedback that we received.
We got a couple of people that said, you know, that knew that the Torx key came with it, but, like, I didn't have a Torx key, so I had to go out and get one. So it's like, all right, and my problem in the past about doing it was that I didn't want to put some cheap, junky Torx key in there. And, like, just, I don't know. I have this thing. I hate those free. You know, you buy IKEA furniture and they come with those really horrible Allen keys that only work 5 times and then you have to throw it away because it just literally rips apart.
Yeah.
I hate that. I can't stand that stuff. Yeah,
but also sourcing those things right now, it's
super hard. So we actually sourced a really high quality, nice Torx key that's economical, so we can actually include it in the kit.
We're going to include it in the kit.
Yeah.
So if you buy the kit, just keep it. Just keep it.
Yeah. It's a great Torx key.
It's my gift to you.
Yes.
So we've also gotten local feedback here to help us revisit our branding.
Yeah.
Previously, we've always said Predator Cycling built by hand in Southern California. A couple things wrong with that. One, we're not in California anymore.
Yeah.
And two, we still do build everything in-house, and I use my hands. But we really utilize the softwares and technologies provided to us, and that includes new manufacturing systems that are more automated.
Yeah.
And built by robots doesn't sound so great. So we've decided to change it to Predator Cycling, designed and manufactured in Tennessee, USA.
USA.
We had
just getting ready.
We added the USA because we didn't know if everyone knew where Tennessee was.
That was just a clarification, just to make sure it's not some place else. It's actually Tennessee, USA,
right.
Within the United States.
Anyway, so we're gonna working on that new logo / emblem, and we're gonna include it in our new 3D printed items to really make our product line more cohesive and representative of where we are now, both locationally and creatively / manufacturally. Is that a word? If that's a word?
It is now.
Where we are in our process of manufacturing.
For sure. And I think it's like, I mean, I don't know. I've tried to, I thought that was probably a good way to split in that we like we actually something that we take a lot of pride in is that we actually design and manufacture our own part, like here in house, we build it.
In the U.S., I think U.S. manufacturing has definitely taken a big hit, and I think
U.S. manufacturing is great, especially if you're here, you know, building it. But like my big thing is it's like companies that actually make their own products. I think it's a big thing because, you know, you get that quicker response in your design to manufacturing workflow. You actually know what's going on. You're not designing a part and sending it out and having like some other subcontractor company engineer the part for you and then make it. Like, I don't know. Like, I think it's a big deal when you design and make your own parts.
Yeah.
So we take a lot of pride in that. And it's hard and we do it. And we figured out how to do it. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, working on that, adding that. You just don't slap a sticker on. You're actually designing it into the 3D print. So we have to design it in the software and actually test it in the 3D print to see if that logo actually works.
I'm running the deltas. I've already done the test, the nested test print for the deltas, and everything worked. And we're just doing the updated logo now. And then and we have the Kios that are pretty much done. We'll have a test print of those coming up here in the next day or so.
And then we got to figure out how to get that logo on the tiny little Genius water bottle cage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to fit.
Maybe I'll slap a sticker on it. Anyway. Anyway, that's what's going on. So anything else before we wrap it up?
No. I mean, on the Genius bottle cage action front, we're going to have a hang tag coming. Got a hang tag coming
soon.
Hey,
exciting news. Print on cardboard.
Yes, on recycled paper.
Yes. I'm working on it now.
Yep.
So, anyway, I'll unveil it soon.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So we thank you for choosing to take some time with us, and we look forward to future breakaways. Look for us on Instagram and LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and in person here in Tennessee. We ask our listeners to please share, like, and subscribe. We're available on all major streaming platforms. Thanks for listening. Have a good one, and find some time to break away.